Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. French President Emmanuel Macron says he's advocating strategic ambiguity when it comes to Ukraine. This includes sending Western military personnel to fight for Kiev. This is not strategic ambiguity, but rather strategic confusion. Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, Alfred Desaias in Geneva. He is an author and former UN independent expert on international order. In Brussels, we turn to Pierre-Emmanuel Thoman. He is a lecturer at Lyon University. And in Nice, we cross to Alex Mikhailovich. He is a veteran reporter and foreign affairs analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Alex, let me go to you first in Nice, because you're in France, and I started out with the French president here. He says he's advocating a form of strategic ambiguity, and then he says under the conditions in which he will send troops, his troops, NATO troops, somebody's troops, I don't know. And those conditions are Kiev's lines break, or they a request is made by Zelensky. So I don't see that as ambiguity. I find it confusing and certainly very dangerous. Go ahead, Alex.
By ambiguity, right? It's one of two things. Either you don't know what you're talking
about,
or you're trying to confuse people. Like it's that simple. Going along the lines of him saying he's going to send troops in if a line breaks or if Ukraine makes a request. Well, I think Ukraine would have already made that request if it had a chance to make a request. These are, you know, pie in the sky ideas. Macron's playing little Napoleon here. He's pushing out all these ideas to NATO while NATO's really not even backing him on it. You talk to any sane politician, nobody wants to go into Ukraine officially. Now, the other side of that coin is we know that since 2014, the Canadians, the Americans, the French, the British, everybody's been on the ground in Ukraine unofficially. So what does this make? What difference does this make? Well, it makes a big difference, actually, when you look in a diplomatic sphere of things. When you say you're officially on the ground, well, that takes things up a level. And that's what people are sick and tired of. We need to stop this type of rhetoric. We should be pulling back. We know what the situation is on the ground. Lines have been broken time and time again because Ukraine is backing off. They're backing off. Their line is being broken very quickly and solidly in the past few months. So why would Macron say this? Posturing. I mean, you have Germany, which is the economic engine of Europe, and then you have France, which is the most hardcore military, let's say, troops or existence or the military here in Europe. They are the strongest. We know that about France. But that does not mean that you should be rattling that sword as much as that you're rattling it. I hope that President Xi told them a thing or two about how to actually run these things, because you need to sometimes have the adult in the room. And we know when Macron met with him, we all know who looked like the adult in the room. So let's pull back. Let's stop playing these, schoolyard games with one another, and let's get to some solutions.
Yeah, I agree. Alfred, you know, but if you look at the predicate of Macron's statements, and he's all over the place. He actually was very conciliatory in the beginning of all of this. Now he wants to be the hawk in NATO. But, you know, the conditions that he said, you know, if the lines break and Zelensky makes the call, doesn't that tell you that Ukraine is losing and maybe they should try a different strategy? Alfred?
Well, obviously Ukraine is losing and they know it. But they're putting themselves under pressure. And this makes me think of another French Napoleon, Napoleon III, who did not stop provoking the Prussians, and his arrogance forced them eventually, just to save face, to declare war on Prussia, which he lost in 6 months. Now, we don't want that. We have nuclear states that can destroy not only themselves, but the rest of humanity. So you need to break the gridlock, you need to break the pretense, you need to accept the fact that whether we like it or not, we live on only one planet. And we cannot afford continued escalation. But it's not only Macron who's mad, it is Joe Biden and Antony Blinken and Olaf Scholz and his foreign minister and Rishi Sunak. and his foreign minister, David Cameron. They're all using very belligerent rhetoric.
Well, I mean, Alfred, now that you brought up Cameron, I'll go to Pierre Emmanuel. I mean, he very loosely said, you know, that Ukraine can use whatever British weapons they want, however they want, even against Russia proper. And then the response to that is that the Russians are saying, well, they will respond to any use of weapons used against Russia used by the Ukrainians, if it's used in Ukraine or even beyond Ukraine. Now, that is getting serious business here. Go ahead, Pierre Emmanuel.
Yes. It looks like the narrative of all Western states and with France also trying to take the lead now of a narrative underlying that Ukraine will be winning the war, Russia should lose the war, and this is not happening on the ground. So regarding the public opinion, they realized they're being totally misinterpreting this crisis from the beginning. People know this. They understand more and more that this narrative was fake. And Emmanuel Macron, like other Western leaders, they don't know what to do more to still appear as credible. And the only way they found is to increase their hawkish narrative, like putting troops on the ground, having missiles hitting territory of Russia. Although from the French point of view, you've got also this internal debate in France with the elections at European Parliament approaching, where the political party of Emmanuel Macron is going to lose the battle because Rassemblement National, this main opposition with Mr. Bardella and Marine Le Pen, is now the double votes expected from party of Emmanuel Macron. So Emmanuel Macron would like to reinforce this narrative of being very strong in international affairs.
Well, Pierre Emmanuel, let me ask you a simple question. Do young French soldiers want to go fight in Ukraine? Apparently, they're already there, some of them. I mean, would the general staff of France allow Macron to make that decision? I mean, or even the people make a decision here. The stakes are so high for someone posturing.
Yes, that's right. It's dangerous because it looks like this narrative is increasing and rising the stakes, and in the end, we don't know, because to look credible, Emmanuel Macron might be feel obliged to do something, to send really troops officially. We don't know, but many generals in France, experts, say this is we will be a disaster because France has not the capability to have strategic ambiguity. You need a huge military capability behind. And France is not ready for high-intensity war. And this is why it's so dangerous. We know that there are already some instructors on the ground, and they try to hide this fact. And the question is, will it become official to have troops on the ground? And even with a minimum level of troops, it will be a disaster. And most of French people disagree with that. The main political parties in opposition disagree with that. But this narrative is still going on, I think, until the end of European elections, maybe
well,
until
I mean,
the
you know, it's let me go to Alex back at Nice here. It's pretty pathetic if you're doing this kind of calculation based on European elections. The stakes are much higher than these elections coming up here. You know, the problem, Alex, here is that Macron keeps saying Russia should not be allowed to win. Is that a strategy? What about Ukraine? Go ahead, Alex.
I mean, that's the big question. And what are they saying? That Russia wants to take over all of Ukraine? That has never been the idea. If anything, the first move into Kiev was to do the exact same thing that the Americans did, and that was to coup a government and basically put somebody else in charge with a little bit more common sense of the people that are running the show at the time. For Russia to take over Ukraine, Again, that's not any strategic value to Russia to go all to the end. They're holding the land that the Russian speakers were there. They lost their rights to speak their language, lost their rights to teach their kids Russian, who lost their rights to have their signs up in Russian. I mean, these are things that we've seen happen around the world when you are either ethnic cleansing or you're pushing people out of an area. So what Russia did was defending its people, people that could identify themselves as Russian. Does Russia have basically some sort of idea of going to the very end of Ukraine and then putting up missiles pointing at Europe? Russian missiles don't have to go up to the border of the EU to hit their targets, just like Western missiles don't have to go up to the border of Russia. But for some reason, they thought it would be a good idea to expand NATO into Ukraine, which is the biggest blob of land next to Russia, all the way up to the border. And we all know, I think we all know that we're sitting here, and the people that are watching this, we know how this started. We know that there were negotiations on the table, that this never had to happen. And they all came from the West, the U.S. and friends. And in the end, you know, people that have been talking war forever. I was with the U.N. I've seen all of this since the 1990s. It's money. That's the bottom line. We have special interest groups in the United States and beyond that are making a lot of cash with this. And at the same time, a lot of people are dying, and they don't have to send Americans in when they can use Ukrainians as cannon fodder. And those poor civilians are going through this for absolutely no reason. This can stop.
Well, Alex, if I can say with you before we go to the break here, what happens if French troops start dying? What is Macron going to do then?
Well, they say that they're ready. French mercenaries or whatever.
Well, the Foreign Legion, they say, is already there. They say the Foreign Legion's already there.
The Foreign Legion's everywhere. And JTF2, the Canadian Special Forces, were there in 2014, and I'm sure they're there to some degree right now, just like we probably have.
All right, Alex, I'm going to have to jump in here. We're going to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine, staying with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Alfred in Geneva. It's for every action, there's an equal reaction, and the reaction to this loose rhetoric that we've heard, particularly over the last few news cycles, where Russia has decided to start exercises, nuclear drills, as a precaution because of the very provocative language coming out of Western capitals. Irresponsible language, I would say. I think we would all agree. But see, there is a reaction, and this is an escalation. Don't Western leaders understand that this is a reaction to their loose rhetoric, Alfred?
No, they do not want to understand. I mean, they live in their parallel world, their parallel reality. And the public, the masses, are subject to relentless brainwashing. I mean, and it's not only New York Times, Washington Post, CNN, Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. Even here in Switzerland, you read nonsense in the Neue Zürcher Zeitung. And organizations like mine, I'm in the Geneva International Peace Research Institute, the GIPRI. We have put out a blueprint for peace in Ukraine, which we have sent to the Conseiller Fédéraux in Bern. And of course, you know that we in Switzerland, I'm also a Swiss citizen, we are going to have in June, this so-called peace conference at the Bürgenstock on Lake Luzern. Now, there are going to be a lot of blueprints for peace. The 10-point plan of Zelensky is delusional, absolutely disconnected from reality. But the 12-point plan of the Chinese is good. The 10-point plan of the Africans is good. The International Progress Organization has put up a very good plan also. Pope Francis has put out a plan. So there are ideas out there, and my hope is that if enough states participate, obviously Russia is not going to participate, that's clear. But if the presence of China and India and South Africa and Brazil and Mexico, etc., might lead the conference to discard the 10-point plan of Zelensky as totally unrealistic and start to look for possibilities of a compromise.
It's interesting, Alfred, that you mentioned a number of countries around the world and an individual, the Pope, and organizations that have a blueprint to start the process of ending this conflict here. I'm going to go to Pierre Emmanuel right now. But no Western leader does that. No Western leader. No one in NATO does that. On Putin's inauguration, he said, Russia remains open to dialogue, and it's up to the other side to decide how to move forward. Pierre Emmanuel, I mean, where is the peace plan from the Biden people, from Cameron, from Sergeant Shultz? Where is it? They never use that language of ending this conflict and maintaining security for all players. They never talk that language. Go ahead, in Brussels.
Yes, unfortunately, I think European member states of NATO are not really sovereign anymore. And these people, they feel more loyalty to appear as loyal to this Euro-Atlantic system and to have a rank within NATO than to have an independent voice. And this is like the Europeans are competing to be the best ally of Washington and trying to also at the same time to fill the vacuum in case of Trump will be elected, because they think United States will less and less be present in European affairs. But at the same time, they follow the main geopolitical objectives of Washington, and it's like they want to find a niche in this hegemony of Washington in Europe and to found their own leadership within this systemic Western dominance without to try to find any end of this conflict.
But Pierre Emmanuel, I don't want to be too insulting here, but is there any leadership in Europe at all? I mean, you know, you see this Macron, he's channeling his inner de Gaulle. He can't find it. Cameron is no Churchill. Where is leadership in Europe? I mean, they're all replaceable. You could take the prime minister from Finland and put them in Italy and no one would notice. Go ahead. Keep
exactly.
going.
Exactly. Because the political class is of a very low quality, to be frank, since the departure of De Gaulle in France. And more you've been seeing president of France more and more aligned on the Anglo-Saxon world without to have their independent voice. And Emmanuel Macron also doesn't have any experience of a real crisis of war. Jacques Chirac was the last president to have experience in war. And they don't understand this new multipolar world, because they come from an ideological bubble of France should take the lead in this European project. But this EU is dependent of NATO and Western dominance. And they don't understand how to position themselves in this new multipolar world emerging, where actually EU is losing power, and they find only aggressivity.
Speaking of being aggressive, Alex, you know, we have the Polish officialdom wanting to host the American nuclear missiles on their soil. I mean, what country in the world says we want to be a target for in a nuclear war? I can't understand that whatsoever. Why would you want to do that unless you want to just curry favor? You're giving a nod to Washington. Where are your guys in Europe? Forget the French, forget the Germans. Poland will stand with you. I mean, this is insanity. And the Russians are not going to react to it, really? Go ahead.
We need to talk to the Polish people instead of the Polish politicians, which are obviously bought. I don't think that if you talk to anybody that's Polish anywhere here in Europe, they'll tell you a very different story about their feelings to what's happening in Ukraine. There still is some sanity in the EU and in Europe. If you look at and down the end of the line there, if you're looking into Hungary, if you're looking into Croatia, and you listen to some of their politicians, these are people that have seen it, especially the Croatians. Get outside of the EU, talk to the Serbians. You know, there's this whole mythology that Serbia is somehow attached to Russia. I don't know, like by an umbilical cord. It's not. There's people that are pro and anti-Russia in Serbia as well as in Croatia. But these are countries that have seen war. They know what it's about. Their politicians that are now leading those nations know exactly what happens, and they know that it's something to be avoided. Go a little bit north to Hungary, then you just got a politician there, a man running the show, that seems to have a lot more common sense than when you start moving west.
Well, Alfred, it seems to me, with all this loose and dangerous rhetoric coming out of Western capitals, out of NATO land here, their primary objective is to keep it going in lieu of doing something else. They don't know what to do. So what's the option? Keep it going until the last Ukrainian is gone. Alfred.
Well, it's going to be bad when the last Ukrainian is gone, because then what do you do at that particular point? I mean, sooner or later, you have to accept that this failed, the same as the U.S. incursion in Vietnam failed, same as the U.S. incursion in Afghanistan failed. The U.S. does it very easily, just turns the page, nothing ever happened, we forget it, we leave a mess behind. But the Europeans, they are in a very difficult position. There are intelligent people like Dominique de Villepin, who have said very intelligent things. You have in Germany, Graf von Schulenburg, and several older politicians, but they're not in power. There is a total disconnect between the elites, between our so-called democratically elected leaders, and the people. Ask the masses of the people in Spain or in France or in Italy. They don't want war. Nobody wants war. But their leaders are making money. Their leaders are, shall we say, in the service of Washington. I mean, one day historians will tell us, or if they're whistleblowers that can explain that to us today, it would be useful. But we are just postponing the moment of truth. And I'm very concerned about miscalculations at that time, when Ukraine has clearly been defeated. What then?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, Pierre Emmanuel. I've often said on this program, you know, you often hear the phrase, future historians will explain to us how we got here. But I don't think we really need historians. In the future, we're going to need psychologists. What was wrong with these decision makers? Why did they make the decisions the way they did? They're making decisions against their own vested interests, their own people's interests, and their security. Because at the end of the day, for the Russians, this is all about security. And no European leader is talking about security. It's amazing to me. Go ahead, Pierre Emmanuel.
Yes. Let's remember this famous book, The Sleepwalker, from Christopher Clark. How First World War started, and each country had different interests. They thought it would be a local war, and then we came to a First World War. Because there were miscalculations, a lot of propaganda from all sides. They were lying in the newspapers to the people. But now, people, if they want to find the right information with alternative sites on the internet, you can. And more and more, people, for example, in France, they read more and more alternative experts who tell the truth to the people. And that's why in these elections is going to be already a big surprise. And also, many military experts actually who have been lying on TV on the real situation because they have been paid to say that, They don't know what to do. They don't know what to say anymore because what they said is not happening. And they find only aggressivity on even lying.
We're going to end the program on the same note that we started it. This is all strategic confusion, and we're all going to pay dearly for it. Gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Nice, Brussels, and in Geneva. And, of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, crosstalk rules.